since they want to know.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
College football season is off and rolling. Last night, right here on KOAL, the Utah Utes pick up a 24-11 win over the Florida Gators. It was kind of a, I don't want to say boring, but it was a slow second half. Utah gets off to a quick start, 70-yard score right out of the gate, put up 10 in the second quarter. Third quarter, they had 7 more. Fourth quarter, a little slow, but the Utes did exactly what they needed to do without Cam Rising grabbing a 13-point win over Florida. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about some of the other big games coming up this weekend and more conference realignment. Joining us over the phone, as he does every Friday, we have our college football expert, Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports. Antoine, as always, a pleasure.
Yeah, good to be with you again.
Definitely. Last night, Florida, Utah, getting things rolling. Look, I'm going to give a lot of credit to Utah. I thought yesterday, I said this on the show, if one of these two teams can score 3 touchdowns in this game, they're going to get a win. I like what Florida has defensively. I like what the Utes have defensively. I thought this Utah team would look completely different without Cam Rising. He's a kid that can really just expand. He expand plays. He can expand the playbook. He can beat you with his legs. He can beat you with his arms. On top of that, Bryson Barnes, Nate Johnson. I mean, you almost have to combine 2 quarterbacks to get what you get out of Cam Rising. They did exactly what they needed to do. Bryson Barnes was 12 of 18, 159 yards, did not throw an interception. Nate Johnson showed off just how electric he could be. Had a 27-yard touchdown run. I mean, for Utah, they played a near-perfect game to get the victory last night.
Yeah, I thought so as well. I mean, they got off to a tremendous start, obviously, with the long touchdown pass and, you know, had a really good second quarter, too, as well. And for Florida, I mean, they just kind of shot themselves in the foot with a lot of dumb penalties. Obviously, they couldn't get the ball moving anyway, but when, you know, you don't have a good enough offense to overcome the mental mistakes that they just kept making over and over again, you're going to lose. And especially a team that's as well-coached as Utah, and I think we definitely saw that last night. I mean, I thought Graham Mertz did. I mean, he was okay. He wasn't great, but at the same time, I mean, he got to have people around him that can help, and that certainly wasn't the case there with the Gators offensively.
No, and I think every college football fan knows exactly what I'm talking about. When you're anticipating the start of a new season and you got a marquee matchup like this and your team comes out and they have 4th-and-1 inside, what were they, inside the 10-yard line, if I remember correctly, and they get called for a false start, then you miss a field goal. Then your defense comes out and you hold Utah to 4th down, and then you have 2 guys wearing the same number on special teams, so 4th-and-3 becomes 1st-and-10 for Utah. I mean, my goodness, it just seemed like right out of the gate, Florida was unorganized, and that's a reflection on Billy Napier. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, second year, you would think that, you know, you would start to see a little bit more signs of the team starting to gel and be a little bit more disciplined, but that certainly wasn't the case last night, where I think you kind of saw some of the same mental mistakes they kind of played Florida, you know, last year when they finished 6-7, and things are not going to get any easier for them. I mean, you got Tennessee, you're hosting Tennessee in a couple of weeks. Tennessee's the double 12 team in the country, and then you got to go to Kentucky later on and South Carolina, and obviously you play Georgia and LSU every single, and Florida State every single year. So yeah, this. We already got Gator fans talking about they should fire Billy Napier now. And this is his first game into his second year. And Florida fans are not typically known to be very patient. So if they have another losing season, then, you know, things could start to get ugly around Gainesville pretty quickly.
Well, I will say this about the Florida Gators, and I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about them because I thought Utah was great last night. But Antoine, in the same sense, Graham Mertz, that's the best you're going to see from Graham Mertz. I mean, we've seen this kid before. This is not anything new. And it's not a knock on him, but when I look at the lack of offensive production for Florida, I think it starts at quarterback. Mertz is an average quarterback, and we saw it last night.
Yeah, he's okay. I mean, he's not going to kill you. I mean, he's not going to lose the game for you, but no, he's certainly not going to win it for you. And that's why I say, like, they have to run the ball better. I thought they kind of gave up on the run a little bit too quickly last year. Florida, you know, revolved their offense around the running game. I know they had Anthony Richardson there, who was able to scramble and use his legs outside of the pocket to make plays. But and Graham is obviously not that same player, but you could still have Etienne and Wilson and Johnson there, you know, in the backfield making plays. And I just felt like too early in the game, they gave up on the run, and I think he kind of, you put so much on Mertz, and he's just not a guy that's going to win you a game, like especially throwing the football. He's a guy that's a game manager, and I think people saw that at Wisconsin, and I think you saw a little bit of that too last night.
Ute fans also got to see what Nate Johnson is capable of. If you talk about that Anthony Richardson-type athletic ability, I'm not going to say he's at that level, but nonetheless, very athletic quarterback. So what does life without Cam Rising look like? It doesn't look too shabby. Utah is going to have an athletic quarterback. There's no question.
Yeah, for sure. I think Cam Rising, not that it's a good situation for him to be out, but you know, the bright side of all of this, you get to see other guys out there step up and get some more snaps. And I thought Johnson, you know, in the time he was in there, you know, didn't necessarily do a lot throwing the football, but with his legs, he was able just to move around and make some plays. Obviously, you remember that one touchdown that was for 27 yards, and yeah, that was a tremendous play. And yeah, I definitely think, you know, having those guys in there, even if it's a two-quarterback system, would definitely work at least to an extent early on in the season as players get more and more experience. But they got a tough game at Baylor next week, which will be very interesting for both sides.
Yeah, there's a reason to have a two-quarterback system, right? If you have two quarterbacks because you were undecided on which quarterback gives you the better chance to win a football game, you don't have any quarterbacks. But if you have two quarterbacks that complement each other the way Bryson Barnes and Nate Johnson do, you have something there. I'm not a fan of the two-quarterback system unless they complement each other the way Barnes and Johnson do.
Yeah, I'm not either. But, yeah, I think in this case, especially when you have guys that don't have a ton of experience, I think it kind of works pretty well for them. So I definitely think, you know, we'll see how it pans out against Baylor, a really good defensive team there. Can they keep up the same momentum? But typically, yeah, I'm not necessarily a fan. But I think in this case, especially when you have a guy that, and like Rising, that has so much experience for the Utes, and the other guys behind him don't have as much experience, then, yeah, I can see why they decided to go with the system that they did.
Again, our guest right now, Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports, as we talk college football, recapping Utah's 24-11 win. Let's move over to talk conference realignment. ACC, they add Stanford, they add Cal, they add SMU. It seemed like this was a foregone conclusion, but now it is official. It brings the league to 18 members. 17 are going to play football full-time in this league, but it is great to see that Stanford and Cal have a place to go. And adding SMU to the ACC, I like it, actually. This doesn't stink.
Yeah, I think, I mean, as weird as it sounds, like being in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and I kind of joked about that on Twitter, I think it makes sense, especially considering I think Stanford and Cal align, and also SMU align with a lot of the academics that the ACC has, a lot of really good schools there, obviously like UNC and Duke and Georgia Tech there. And then now you get your footprint out west as well. I mean, Stanford is, outside of football, I think, you know, especially in the Olympic sports, is really good. Cal, kind of the same thing as well. You get to also get a footprint in Texas, which is huge, and SMU. I know a lot of people don't necessarily know about them, but they have a ton of money, especially them being a private school. We can joke around. Like, I don't necessarily like conference realignment, but that's just how, you know, the landscape of college football is today. Everybody's going where the money is. Everybody's going where the good TV deals are, and I think it'll definitely benefit Stanford and Cal and also SMU in the long run.
Yeah, really, the only thing now, I mean, there's no geographical region to any of these conferences, right? I mean, you can throw that out. It is funny that the ACC now has Stanford and Cal. It's funny that the Big Ten, there's USC, UCLA. There is no geographical reasoning behind any of this. This is just the way it's going to be in college football now. I mean, seriously, I think for me, and I know it's probably the same for you, it's hard to get past the geographical nonsense. But once you look past that and just say, okay, this is a super conference, that's basically what it is. We have essentially four super conferences now.
Yeah, and everybody else is just kind of getting left behind there. And the curious thing is about the ACC is I wonder, you know, you had rumblings that Clemson and Florida State and North Carolina wasn't very happy, especially with the way that the TV deal is structured in the ACC and how, you know, I think it's like 2037 when that time is renewed, and I think they want more piece of the pie, especially when you add more teams into it. And, you know, you look at TV deals with the Big Ten and the SEC and ESPN has, you know, no one, why you want, you're the ACC, you want to have more money to structure, even though you're probably not on the same level of those teams. But at the same time, you know, come college basketball season, the ACC is arguably the best basketball conference in America. So, yeah, I definitely think, you know, they deserve to have that much piece of the pie, too, as well, and be up there ranked among to take the conferences like the Big 12 and the Big 10 and also the SEC as well.
Yeah, and I know with NILs, it's easy to forget the student-athlete you know, tag, right? Now you're just an athlete almost to an extent. But if we are looking at the student aspect, the student athlete aspect of this realignment, I mean, let's look at the ACC. They had three schools that will bring both quality of academic institutions. They're also going to bring in big numbers. And that was one of the things that I loved about the Big 12. When you look at the four schools that they added, including BYU, you know, Houston, Central Florida, Cincinnati, when you take a look at who they added, we're talking huge, huge numbers.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, you definitely added schools that, you know, moved the needle, especially when you have Houston there and, you know, already an area where, you know, it's very heavy Texas anyway. I mean, you bring in Cincinnati, who's had a lot of success, you know, obviously football recently there. And then UCL, you know, bring them in. You get a footprint in Florida. Obviously, Florida is a huge recruiting base as well. So, yeah, I definitely think that's going to be big for the Big 10 too as well, Big 12 as well. And then now you're adding, you know, the Arizona schools too as well, and eventually Utah in Colorado. So, yeah, I think the Big 12 is going to pay dividends. It's going to be a huge conference for them and be back in the landscape of the national college football audience once again.
Antoine, let's jump back over and talk about the games that we have coming up this weekend, because it is now officially week one, and biggest game of the weekend, hands down. We're looking at LSU and Florida State. I can't wait for this game. I know the money line right now, the odds makers have this favoring LSU right now by 2 points. I'm actually leaning a little bit more towards Florida State in this game. This is a contest I can't wait for.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, the game's in Orlando, so you know, it'll be heavy Florida State crowd, although that really didn't seem to matter last year when, you know, the game was in the Superdome and it was a heavy LSU crowd, and Florida State was able to win dramatically at the end by blocking that extra point. So, yeah, I definitely think, you know, it's going to be a good quality game. Two teams that are very evenly matched there. I think it's going to come down to his quarterback makes the less mistakes. You got Jalen Daniels there for LSU. I definitely think he's going to make a step up and possibly be a Heisman Trophy candidate this upcoming year. And Jordan Travis, who remarkably is, you know, became one of the best quarterbacks in college football. And I definitely think, you know, that's where it's going to come down to, which quarterback can, you know, take care of the football and be the better decision maker. And ultimately, you know, that's going to, you know, the winner of that game, I believe, you know, will be the guy that makes the less mistakes. And, you know, I definitely think, yeah, I tend to lean towards Florida State too a little bit. I just like the depth that they have on that team offensively and defense. But yeah, I think it's going to be a tremendous game, and obviously definitely the game of the weekend.
Yeah, we'll talk about Florida State's offense here for just a moment, because if you go back to last season, I don't know if people are aware that this was a team that was top 20 in points scored per game. This was a team that, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they were close to top 10 in rushing yards, right? And they were also top 10 in total yards per game, and they went out and they added a couple of kids through the transfer portal. So to me, this has the makings of being one of the most dynamic offenses in the country.
Yeah, I mean, you got quality receivers in Wilson, and, you know, you also have a really good, you know, backfield. Mike Norvell likes to have it. A really deep backfield there. You know, I know Trey Benson, you know, lead them in rushing yards last year, and I expect a much better year from him this upcoming year too as well. And, you know, obviously, Jordan Travis, you know, he can also make some plays too with the run game with his using his legs and also along with his arm too. So, yeah, I expect this to be, again, top 20, 15, 20 offense in the country. And I think, you know, their defense is coming along, and I think it's getting better too. You talk about, you know, they have some big-time playmakers there. So, yeah, I definitely think, you know, that Florida State offense is going to be the key to their success one way or the other this upcoming year.
I know you talked about Napier and the idea that Florida fans want him ousted. I don't think the seat is hot. I know that Brian Kelly is one of the best coaches in the country. However, if LSU was to drop this game again, there's no question things would be uncomfortable, right? I mean, Brian Kelly comes from Notre Dame, where he didn't win a national championship, but they were competitive every year. And I think the Notre Dame fan base at this particular time has accepted the fact that they just want to be competitive. I'm not saying they don't want to win a national title, but if you're competitive and you're in the playoffs, I think that fan base is they're okay with that. That's not the case at LSU, especially when you hand out the money that LSU handed out to Brian Kelly. These are must-win games. And Brian Kelly, let's be honest here, Antoine, he doesn't necessarily have a glowing record in marquee games.
No, but I think last year gives him a little bit more of a saving grace. When you go beat Alabama and you make the SEC championship like they were able to do, which I don't think a lot of people expected them to do that last year, and I think he gets a little bit of a pass, even if they were to lose this game. However, but yeah, these are games that you definitely want to win if you want to contend for a national championship. Because if you win this game, then I definitely think they put themselves in a category where, yeah, maybe we can compete with Alabama, who they beat last year. They got to go to Tuscaloosa later on this year. And, you know, I think the schedule breaks down in a way for LSU where, you know, you beat Florida State, you could possibly be looking at possibly a 12-0 season, at least heading into the SEC championship. You know, assumingly it'll be against Georgia. But yeah, if you lose this, and then you also, again, you got to go to Tuscaloosa and finish 10-2, yeah, that might rub some people the wrong way, because LSU fans are, you know, they want to be up there among the best in college football. And, you know, 10-2, yeah, I don't know how. Yeah, I think you start to see a little bit of rumblings, but I don't think people will be ready to oust him just yet, simply because of what he was able to do and how much they overachieved last year, quite frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, that game Sunday night, 5:30 Mountain Time kickoff. Monday night, we get Clemson-Duke. I'm actually really looking forward to this one as well. Clemson right now, 13-point favorites. Outside of LSU, Florida State, Clemson-Duke, any other game that moves the needle for you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think West Virginia-Penn State. I think that's an interesting game, too. You got two teams in proximity to one another. I know Penn State is a heavy favorite there. But, you know, I think I'm curious to see how West Virginia looks as well. North Carolina, South Carolina. Another border rivalry type game. There, the Gamecocks, the Shane Beamer, I definitely think is ready to take another step up. And I'm curious to see how North Carolina looks. Last year, they kind of floundered later on in the season, but May is definitely a, you know, top five NFL draft prospect. And, you know, if they can ride him possibly to the ACC championship, then who knows? You know, North Carolina could be a dark horse in college football this year.
He's Antoine Staley. He joins us every Friday to talk college football. Antoine, it's always a pleasure to get you on. Before I let you go, of course, let us know where we can find more of your work. And I know we're less than seven days away from the start of the NFL season, so that's a big time for you as well.
Yeah, you can find me at Antoine Staley. That's probably the best way to get associated with, you know, all the work that I do, too. And, yeah, NFL is be there, Chiefs and Lions, so next Thursday, and then for me, it'll be Monday Night Football, September 11th, Jets and Bills on primetime.
Antoine, appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to pause once again. Come back. Plenty more coming up in Stripe Time Sports live from the Sutherland Studios. It's here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.